Welcome back to The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. My name is Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark. And I'm very pleased to be joined today by Terry Davis at the Motion Picture Association, the head of the Trusted Partner Network. We're going to talk about that in a minute. And protecting content, films, TV shows, everything else from leaking before release. It's part of the MPA's, 360-degree, two-sided strategy on keeping stuff safe. I'm really excited to talk to Terry about this. Thanks for being on the show today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, Terry, one thing I really wanted to talk to you about, we were discussing this a little bit beforehand, was your time at Sony Pictures. You were there from 2000 to 2015, which is an enormously important time in terms of the transition of how distribution actually happens. I mean, I sometimes people make fun of me about this because I'm a little bit of a nerd on digital protection and that sort of thing. But I'm fascinated by this period of transition where you go from, physical analog tapes, film, actual film stock, delivering prints to theaters all across the country, to essentially doing everything digitally over the internet. What was living through that transition like? What was working through that transition like?
It was amazing. I mean, my background is post-production in London, and then Sony Pictures hired me and moved me over to LA. And we had just gotten through VHS to DVD, right, which was a huge change. That was taking a workflow that happened discreetly for every single VHS release around the world to suddenly saying, hang on a minute, we can do this better. We can aggregate stuff onto one disc. What does that look like? So we went through that cycle of decentralized to centralized. So we had just got through that. But it was still tape for the most part. And then digital files started to come up, I guess, for like 2007, 2008, maybe a little bit earlier. And of course, being at Sony and anybody else who was at a studio or being a vendor of a studio knows there was such huge volume of videotape. We had videotape libraries everywhere, and all we knew about those videotapes was what was written on the label, normally by some tape op, right, in a lab with very little instruction from us. So suddenly these became even more precious assets, but they became really the source for having to digitize all of those assets. And, there was a big focus on going back to the best source. But the reality was we had to move quickly. So in some cases, we were digitizing or encoding rather from distribution masters as opposed to the actual, proper master. So we went through that, and the change management involved in it was just enormous. It was almost incomprehensible trying to wrap your mind around this huge machine of any studio and the thousands of pieces of content that we were moving every month. And building a supply chain that could accommodate all of those different variables. And by the way, that's still a challenge today. You go to any conference, we're still talking about digital supply chain. But also, how do you go about digitizing your library in a way that you are collecting the right information to drive the automation that was needed? And then, of course, we were all thinking about that and planning and moving forward. And then the tsunami happened in Japan. Which effectively wiped out all tape stock production. So, we were talking about things and doing things like recycling HD Cam SR tapes because we just didn't have enough to keep the pipeline going for post production. So that really accelerated everything. And there was a moment actually that I don't think many people know about where the industry came together. Specifically Sony, Fox, and Paramount led a huge initiative at IBC in Amsterdam. I think it was 2011, the same year as the tsunami, and we called it Go Digital. And we spoke to the industry at large saying, look, we have to have a cutoff time at which you guys who receive tapes from us, broadcasters, distributors, whoever we were selling our content to, had to move to file. So we really had to try and set the pace on it after the tsunami in particular.
That's fascinating. So the tsunami story, I don't actually know anything about it. So the tsunami destroyed the actual tape production facilities in Japan?
Yeah, for Sony.
Oh, man. That's crazy. All right. So 2011, then, this is a few years after the move to digital projection kind of happens, right, in theaters, right? Is this about the same time, about a little after that? Were you guys following that same sort of game plan, or?
It was all going on at the same time. So I was dealing with distribution for post-theatrical, but obviously, you know, we followed theatrical's lead. So the digital cinema conversations were very much going on around that time as well. So it was massive transformation and change management at a time when really the only significant transformation we had been through on the post-theatrical side was VHS to DVD, and that nearly killed all of us. And then suddenly we had to pivot again, and we had to think about building our own digital supply chains and our own digital asset management solutions at a time when all of the great applications that are available now to stand up a digital supply chain reasonably simply and cost effectively didn't exist. So we were all building our own bespoke systems, going up, how do we build automation? What's involved? I mean, we started up departments in the studio that never existed before. We had to create a metadata department and think about title schemas and how are we going to recognize these files when we create them. Onboarding as well. You know, we were delivering to thousands of destinations who hadn't got their head around file either. So when they said, this is our spec, we actually had to create an onboarding team who worked with those recipients of what we were delivering to say, are you sure you mean this when you put down that codec? Because we've tested it and it doesn't work very well. Or oh, this is a great idea. We haven't even thought about this yet. Or how do we do this? It was enormous, really.
Yeah. And that's also around the same time that that Blu-ray becomes.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I as somebody who owned both an HD DVD player and a Sony PS3 in order to fully maximize my HD opportunities, that was another kind of wild time to live through.
Yeah. It just seemed to, you know, sort of 2009 to today, really, it just hasn't stopped. And I think up until that point, you know, the biggest innovation was VHS, which, like I said, was a fairly simple supply chain because it was one for one. It was, you know, I'm the Parisian French version of Age of Innocence, and I'm the VHS of that, right? So that was a much more simple workflow.
Yeah. One more question about DVD, because I do find this again weirdly interesting. When you were making the DVD masters for those, were you pulling from essentially the let's talk about TV in particular, right? Were you pulling from the like broadcast tapes that you sent to the networks, or how did that actually work? Where were the source materials from?
So for the picture, we were remastering. We were going back to the old IPs and remastering because we wanted it to be, you know, the best quality, because DVD, of course, was sold as top quality. But where it came to localization, that was a massive challenge, because in some cases we would have sold Title A to a broadcaster in Italy and given the right to the broadcaster in Italy back then to create the Italian dub and the Italian subtitles. So we were constantly in this ROI analysis of like, is it easier to remake it? Or is it better to go and negotiate with the broadcaster to get back the rights for those local language tracks and subtitles and use them? But what if they weren't created to the standard that we need them? Or what if they'd done censorship and there would be holes in it? And of course, DVD, we wanted to provide full length as much as possible. It was, wherever possible, we got the highest quality source assets. But again, it was a complex balance of how much money do we throw at this thing?
I could talk about this all day. Let's move on to the transfer to digital and protecting digital assets, because that's what the TPN, the Trusted Partner Network at MPA, is doing here. You're actually, let me, this is a thing I like to do because I find it extremely useful. Could you explain in your own words what you do at TPN and what you, the goal of the organization is?
So Trusted Partner Network, TPN, is wholly owned by the Motion Picture Association. And our mission, very simply, is to keep content secure. It's really as simple as that. So everything involved in that. So we work with all six of the MPA studio members and more now. We have the other big two as members of TPN as well, along with BBC Studios and Sky Studios and so on. And we leverage the MPA best practices. So I don't know if you know this, but for decades, MPA have been publishing content security best practices. And, you know, they have been really the Bible, the foundation for security in the industry. I remember being a receptionist at a post-production house in London and the guy from the MPA coming to visit our building to check that it was secure. You know, and we like hiding everything away and bringing out the best teapot and all of that. So this has been going on for a long, long, long time. And at the same time, the studios were doing all of their security assessments of the vendors. So basically, we have a community of, I don't know the number, 3,000 plus vendors out in the world who provide services to the studios to create and distribute content. Visual effects houses, audio post-production, localization, you name it. Any type of service that is needed to create or distribute content. And every one of them has to be as secure as they possibly can be. So what was happening was MPA were doing their assessments, but increasingly studios were doing their own assessments as well. And because really the community of vendors who work on pre-release content is fairly finite, these vendors were finding themselves being audited by up to 8, 9, 10 different studios in a year, in a single year. So it hit breaking point and the studios realized that they're not really competing on security. Security is a baseline that, you know, everybody should be contributing to keep all content safe. And some brilliant people before I got involved came up with the idea of TPN. And they said, well, what if we did one industry, one audit? What if we leveraged the MPA best practices and we built a assessment on top of that? And we drove all of the vendors to TPN to do a TPN assessment that would then be held in a central location and all of the studios could leverage that, right? So we would introduce massive efficiency into the industry. So that's what they did. And they launched in 2018, super successful. I think they grew something crazy like 350% in their first year because it was fulfilling such a need in the industry. But they were only focused on site assessment because cloud was still kind of sort of new. And while everybody knew they had to get to cloud security, the site assessments were really the important things, like literally brick and mortar cameras on doors. So they had this huge growth. And then, of course, COVID hit. And the pandemic, and everybody went to work from home and did what? They moved to the cloud.
Yeah.
So it created this huge fracture. So all of the progress that TPN had made stopped. The studios were still, to some degree, producing content. They had to start introducing their own cloud assessments to make sure the vendors they were giving work to were secure. And TPN really became fractured. So I joined in February 2022, not as a security expert, but as a sort of really operations in the industry and some expertise in business transformation. And we introduced app and cloud, updated the TPN assessments to include that. So today, vendors can, it's a voluntary program, they voluntarily sign up to do TPN. And the studios have a central repository again now to look at site or application and cloud security assessments from which they can make their own independent risk-based decisions. Because I know I'm saying a lot. I'll finish after this one sentence.
That's good.
The really fascinating thing about this job that I sit in is I work with all of the studios, but they all have different risk profiles, right? So TPN doesn't pass or fail or approve or disapprove. All we do is gather the status and each studio makes their own decision. But what we do is, you know, gather as much information as the studios need. And that's constantly changing, you know, with new technology coming along. So it's a great central position.
Well, this is let's jump back just a little bit, because I'm kind of curious what the difference between the security on analog or even like early digital, you know, discs and that sort of thing. What was the MPA looking at when you were there as the receptionist, you know, watching them come in and scan the place for leaks and whatever? But like, what is the difference between that look like and the difference between now with the cloud-based, you know, digital first difference?
It's very different. But what's interesting is, because this is, you know, while we adapt to change quickly, in some ways that we don't, right? So probably, well, not probably, I know, I, you know, we haven't even been launched with this new program, including App and Cloud, for a year yet, but we're looking at the data now and we know conclusively that many of our members are hybrid, right? They still work on-prem and in the cloud. So we're still asking the old questions, cameras on doors, you know, the proper way to secure a building. Do you keep your visitor logs? How long do you keep them for? Who has the keys to the safe room? All of those questions, you know, very, very physical. But at the same time, we're talking about vulnerability scanning and, you know, cloud frameworks and what is needed to make sure that you don't have any issues, intrusion detection, you know, all of those things that we need to worry about now. So we're balancing the two, and we're just now starting to see software application vendors join as well. So like Adobe and Signient and SohoNet, you know, really big name in the industry. And they're completing the TPM assessment. But if they don't have a physical infrastructure, we're not going to ask them about, you know, cameras on doors, for example.
Right. Well, I mean, this gets to kind of an interesting thing that you guys have to figure out here, which is, as you mentioned, risk profiles. You know, there's a difference between a company that is putting out a $200 million blockbuster in 3,000 screens and like trying to keep that asset, that investment safe, as opposed to somebody who is doing the final dub on a Honeymooners episode, you know, from 50 or 60 years ago. Like, what when you're looking at these companies and trying to figure out who needs what, how do you individualize that for them?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked it, actually, because we have a solution for that. So we have some baseline questions. There's about 10 of them that we ask up front. Do you work on pre-release content? Do you work on post-release content? Do you have work from home employees? Do you work in the cloud and site or just site? Do you do DVD replication? Because that still exists, right? So we have these baseline questions from which we can de-scope the assessment or scope it up, right, if they do everything. So we try every way to improve the experience of the vendors. Because, I mean, these assessments, they're tough, right? They take a long time. It's a big investment for the vendors to go through this. So we want to make sure we only ask them the relevant questions. And we've spent a lot of time on that, actually. We rebuilt a new platform towards the end of last year. We launched it when we relaunched the program with App and Cloud. And we've spent a lot of time thinking about building that functionality in. And it never stops, right? Because we will continue to update the best practices with feedback from all of the studios. Actually, we have a workshop coming up where we're going to be talking about this with all the studios, but also with feedback from the vendor community, those who have been through TPN. We want to hear from them and we want to take their feedback as well. So we're constantly adding new best practices without making the list too big, right? I mean, fun fact, when we got here and started to look at the MPA best practices, they were at something like 360, not including App and Cloud. Which is very, very, very difficult to answer all of those questions. And as we started to look into it, we realized some were duplicative, some weren't, you know, really a requirement anymore, like, you know, wearing form-fitting clothing in a replication plant so you don't steal a D2 in your pants at the end of the day and that type of thing, while balancing the need to update it for the new technology. So we spent maybe 6 months with all of the studios and some key stakeholders in the vendor community saying, how can we rewrite these while still being robust and secure enough to do the job, but to improve the user experience? And we ended up republishing last October with 65. So we took it from 360 to 65, which in turn informs the questions that we ask the vendors.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. I was going through the list of best practices, and frankly, this is so much of it is over my head, and just like, well, these are things I don't really understand. But it is really interesting to think about all of the different leak points. You know, the potential places where a pre-release thing can be released, and this is an important distinction as well, because I mean, like, I think when most people think of piracy, they think of like the guy in the movie theater with the camcorder, or now a phone, you know, taping the screen, or, you know, after the fact, you know, something's on, shows up on HBO Max, and then, you know, 30 seconds later, it's on Pirate Bay. And like, this is an entirely different, front of the piracy war that I think people don't really think about. And the problems are when you're looking at the best practices, you know, what are you guys most concerned about? Is it strictly technical safety, secure websites? I mean, are you looking, is it individuals, background checks, that sort of thing? Like, what does that process look like, and what are you guys most afraid of?
I mean, it's everything, and that's the problem, right? It's we're in a one size does not fit all business, but trying to implement a sort of one size fits all solution, because we can't bespoke it too much, apart from the automation that I just described to you. It's everything. We ask about background checks, we ask about training, we ask about password policies. It's everything. We have four different domains where we press heavily on organization. Is your management aware of what your business continuity programs are? You know, we ask things like that, really, really pushed on it, because if you think about it, the best practices are trying to ensure that the work the studios give to their vendors is done with confidence, right? There has to be a trust. I didn't come up with the name Trusted Partner Network, and since I've taken over, I've really, you know, looked at it from all angles. I'm like, is it a great name? And actually, it's a great name, because what we have is a registry of trusted partners who have answered these questions. They've taken a good, honest look at where their vulnerabilities are. They work with us then to address the vulnerabilities and close the gaps. And it's on a biannual cadence. So, you know, it's not a one-time relationship. But, you know, so we have the organizational domain, we have the technical domain where we get into cloud, we have physical domain where we're pushing on, you know, if you have a building, what does that building look like and how have you organized it? And it used to be, you know, we talk about script to screen, right? It sounds good, script to screen, but actually we are way pre-script, right? We're working with vendors to protect storyboards and visual mm-hmm. ideas and, mm-hmm. you know, way, way back then. And then all the way through to distribution, which is, I believe you're meeting with Jan van Voorn, our head of the ACE program at mm-hmm. MPA. So that's kind of the, you know, TPN and ACE are the two sides of the same coin, right? We do what we call content security. So we work upfront with anybody who's touching content throughout the supply chain, pre-script to screen. And then what Jan will talk about is what happens with, you know, sites that are pirated. How does he go in and shut them down? And he does an amazing job. So the MPA is trying to serve its members and the general industry by this 360 approach. What do we do proactively? ACE is proactive as well, but, you know, meaning we're in the production and post-production pipeline. And then what do we do afterwards? Because it's as damaging now to lose subscriptions, right?
Right. I mean, I it's funny. I hadn't even really thought about the whole previz, you know, angle, the storyboards and all that, because I mean, I'm sure, you know, if somebody got a good look into Kevin Feige's hard drive, there would be, you know, problems for years after that. But it's fascinating. I mean, it's funny. I was doing some research before the show and trying to remember some of the big pre-release leaks. And I feel like there haven't been that many. I feel like I'm sure it is still a problem. I'm sure it still happens. But, you know, back in the mid to late aughts and the early teens, I mean, it was like Revenge of the Sith leaked, like X-Men Origins Wolverine, you know, I think the Expendables 3. I remember that one being on Pirate Bay and whatever. And, you know, I think it was something like 5 million downloads before they were able to kind of pull it down. I'm curious if these things still happen and are just kind of quietly, we're not going to draw attention to it, or if it's a problem that really has kind of gotten under control in recent years.
So looking at our data, right, because now we're in a great position where we can actually look, we have since we launched in February, we've got just over 800 companies who have signed up to this program, which is way more than we thought would happen in the first year. So it speaks to the need in the industry. So we're able to slice and dice this data now and really take a good look at, we have a membership fee, right? And the membership fee is based on annual gross revenue. So we're able to say, well, what does security look like for companies with less than $5 million annual gross revenue a year? What does security look like for companies who are $200 million plus? And then you slice and dice it by, you know, EMEA and APAC and LATAM and North American. You look at it that way. And what is really, really heartening at this early look, not even a year in, is anybody, any company, smallest mom and pop shop in Indonesia, all the way up to the multinational global $200 million plus companies, understand how important security is. And I have to say, we're really, really pleased with how each company, no matter their demographic, has taken this very, very seriously. And going back to a question you asked earlier, you know, the sort of Seinfeld rerun versus the Marvel pre-release conundrum, right? So we mm-hmm. did the de-scoping. But we've also introduced a concept where we have a blue TPN shield and a gold TPN shield. Blue TPN shield means that the company has self-reported, they've self-attested what their security status is and answered questions. Which, if I'm a studio and I'm looking at, you know, some library TV rerun, that may be good enough. I'm not going to force them to go through an assessment. If it's a, you know, top tier title pre-release, you're going to want to go through an assessment. So we have a directory of assessors that we've worked with to accredit. These are fantastic people who know the industry inside and out, but also are really auditors by trade. And they go in and they work with all of the vendors who have answered our questionnaire to say, actually, you said yes, but we say no, and this is a remediation item that you need to go and fix. Mm-hmm. So has it reduced incidents? I'm probably the wrong person to ask. You would need to ask each individual studio about, you know, what they're battling with. But is the industry continually raising the security standard? Yes. Is the TPN program helping with that? Yes, because we now see the data and we see where the gaps are. And in 2024, we'll be working on, you know, what do we do to improve that? Do we provide some sort of education program? Do we provide some sort of library of security policies for the smaller companies that don't have a CISO position or a security department, right? So we're very, very focused on obviously getting the studios what they need in terms of making vendor choices independently and based on their own risk profile. But we're also very focused on, now we're in this great position to rising tides floats all boats, right? What can we do to help everybody?
Mm. All right. At the risk of exposing a security problem, at the risk of, you know, what when you slice and dice the data, what is an area that kind of routinely comes up as a risk area or a problem area that needs addressing?
So there are a few that come to mind, probably business continuity planning, right? Because when something happens, when you get that, you know, punched stomach that there's been a ransomware attack or there's been something or an employee has, you know, taken something they shouldn't have done or whatever the cause of the incident is, you need to shut down and you need to regroup. But you're a key part of this industry pipeline. So what is your business continuity? If you need to shut down your infrastructure, right? What's your business continuity? How are you going to keep going? What's your disaster recovery? And it's a really, really hard thing to do. I remember doing business continuity planning in my old jobs, and it's awful. You have to sit down, look at every single workflow, and at each stage go, what if? Go through all the what ifs. I mean, it's exhausting, but so important. So I think, you know, that is something that I would encourage all companies to really focus on. And, you know, MFA, multi-factor authentication, is kind of a fact of life these days, but incredibly important when you have work from home employees, which a lot of these companies still do as a throwback to the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that was everything I wanted to ask. That was pretty much everything I wanted to focus on here. I always like to close these interviews by asking if there's anything I should have asked. If you think there's stuff folks should know about TPN, MPA, frankly, anything. What do you think folks should know about that I have failed to discuss with you today?
I think the global nature of this, right? So of the 800 plus companies that we have signed up to TPN, 70% of those companies are international. So 30% in the US, which is incredible. It's across something like 58 different countries. So again, you know, we need to really, really consider that and make sure that we have TPN assessors who can travel to those countries or are in those countries or have language skills. You know, this industry, I think TPN, because it's under MPA, could be perceived to be very Hollywoodized because we work with the Hollywood studios. But this is a global business now. MPA is global, right? Mm-hmm. And TPN accordingly has to be in the companies that are signing up to do this, demonstrate that.
It's funny you mentioned that because I was having to explain to somebody the other day that the MPA is the MPAA. They dropped right. The last day for, you know, it's a global business, but it's a good reminder. Well, Terry, thank you very much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
And as always, I am Sonny Bunch. I'm culture editor at The Bulwark, and I will be back next week with another episode of The Bulwark Goes to Hollywood. We'll see you guys then.